And I think both talks about on this topic and say calculating integrals with those techniques. Now I will introduce a topic shortly, and then we'll tell you something about x-based representations. So x is here the momentum fraction, so we have a single scale problem. But then I come to a point which probably I should put into quotation marks, which I would like to call Mellin symmetry, because there's a symmetry behind this, certainly not a complete symmetry, which solves all the problems, but it simplifies greatly the structures. So we will dwell on this. Then I will actually go back to integrals, which have to do with no scale, so they're just numbers. This is multiple theta values, and they can be viewed as a limit for n going to infinity of the, as well known, the multiple harmonic sums. So we will have an easier exercise to then line up with the real problem, the multiple harmonic sums. And basically we speak about the algebra of these objects, and actually it turns out that's the algebra of more general objects, because the algebra which rules those things mainly has nothing to do really with the mathematical structure, but rather the index structure of the objects. And you can have many different kind of objects, and Sven will introduce more in the second half. So I think this is also useful for many scale problems, actually, rather than only single scale problems, at least it is. So this has to be explained by also some mathematical facts. They come out of the theory of codes, or the theory of words, so one can understand this, one can count the bases. And there's, of course, also relations which are more special, designed to these multiple harmonic sums, specially the so-called deeper relations. And at the end, I would like to tell you something on how we bring this to a code to really do very effective the evolution by these things. Now to start with, we have factorization in deep inelastic scattering, so the final state is fully inclusive, and we can move between the Wilson coefficient, which is sitting here, and a partner density, which is sitting here around. This is connected for massless situations with this so-called Mellin convolution, and this Mellin convolution is also the back, of course, of this Mellin transformation, which solves quite a lot of these problems. Now, why do we do this? This was motivated in this conference quite a lot. We would like to have alpha s very precise, not only experimentally, systematically with 1%, but also theoretically. So therefore, we need this three-loop endless dimensions. And to handle this, all the complexity, we need also some new mathematics, and perhaps not only there, but also in other places where we reduce the number of terms. And that is the basics I would like to talk about. Now, starting up with x-based representations, so we have here only experts, I can be very brief on this. When you do an integral just in the normal momentum fraction representation, you encounter very easily and very soon on the two-loop level the so-called Nielsen-type integrals introduced by Nielsen at the beginning of the last century. And sometimes one has to generalize it a little bit. So you see here a logarithm of z and then some upper power of a logarithm of 1 minus xz, for instance, and you can have other quantities here, and this list can be prolongated when it becomes more and more complicated. You can have more and more of those. Now, there is a rising and lowering operator. This is a differential from d to d ln x, where you can move around this logarithm, actually. And so these things are related, and that's, of course, well known. Now, for weight n, we have, for instance, the ln. Then for weight 1, it would be just the logarithm. Then for weight 0, we get this rational fraction. And weight 1 are also these differentials where you can integrate and integrate and integrate the harmonic polylogarithm, so you can go further and further in the complexity in these structures. Now, when you look into these results, and there's a classical paper by Willy van Erwin and his student, is Alan Zijlstra, in the beginning of the 1990s, 1992, you see, of course, a crude complexity, and that was at that time the state of the art calculating physical objects, so this is just the first page, we go to the second page, and we go to the third page. And that's not everything that you can do for polarized scattering and so on. And I've counted this as a 77 function, the two loops you have actually to manage. And there's not so many relations between those. Okay, you can probably simplify this a little, but I personally did not see any structure, so you have nicely things as is dry logarithms with these prefactors. So this gives you quite some task. Now you have to imagine.
Can you count log x times log 1 minus x as separate functions?
I do so, but I don't repeat, say, powers in front of that, which are Mellin symmetric and so. But all what gives different sums I have also counted. And now the question is, can we systematize this a little bit in going to three loop? Because, I mean, the point is, when you map this to harmonic sums finally, you have a simple counting relation. The counting relation is 3 to the n minus 1, when n is the depth of the harmonic sum. So you get 80, this is very close to 77, what you need, because you have to go to depth 4. Not all the depth 4 sums occur, but you get very close to what Willi van Herven actually got. When you would like to go to the three loop coefficient functions, this means 3 to the 6 and minus 1, that is 728. And that would be Sven's problem in potentially, it's not really happening, but one has to fear those things. So the problem is really getting complex as a power, and perhaps one has to think about this and to see whether one can simplify things. No, it's 3 to, you need depth 4 sums, and when you add them all up to depth 4, you get 80.
But there's
Li4s
in
there? No, the point is, this is sums with depth 4. Yeah. This is an Li3 over 1 plus or minus x.
Oh, so you can't
I count this, yeah, because this gives one weight. This gives an additional weight, actually. So the polylogarithm is always appearing in these connections. Now, we pretty much hope that in Mellin space we can at least synchronize the problem. And this is, of course, not very unnatural, because if you look back into the development of deterministic scattering, the operator product expansion, you are in the first place in Mellin space and you have to work there, because only on the even or odd moment you can really define your problem. And it's, say, upside down only after the invention of the Parton model that you worked in X space. So the more natural thing is actually the Mellin moments, and this symmetry is also, I think, manifest. So what we do is we transform our quantities, which we got somewhere, say, at the two-loop level in X space, with a Mellin transform to harmonic sums. We synchronize those harmonic sums, then we apply algebraic relations. And then we are, of course, not done, because we would like to go back to experiment and measuring in this momentum fraction space of Bjork and X space here. So we have actually to make an analytic continuation of all the harmonic sums in the upper index n to the complex plane, study their analyticity behavior. So it turns out, we come to that later, that we have meromorphic functions. And with a contour integral, a single integral, you go then back. But you have to do this step of the analytic continuation, which is also a difficulty technically, but I think this can be solved in all the cases we are studying. Now, to show you this a little bit, how these tables look, so we actually calculated several years ago the first 80 Mellin transforms in a correspondence table to harmonic sums. So you see, for those things which are, say, the normal infrared logarithms, so the life is actually simple, so you get polynomials of single harmonic sums of a certain depth here, down here. So this is maybe a relatively easy part. Then, of course, you get also more nasty logarithms. But just as an example, I would like to show you this function, which I highlighted before. And this is actually depending on 4 harmonic sums, and 3 of them are independent. One is dependent on another one, as we will see a little bit later. And one of these sums is actually a little bit nasty. It would correspond to a Mellin transform. This is this one of a function f1. And actually, you can integrate this down to a one-dimensional integral representation. And this is this one here. You see, you run into argument problems quite easily. And you perhaps can't do any further integral of that. Let's say an indefinite, so a normal integral, not a bounded integral. This is very difficult. To go further with those things, this would be essentially difficult. Now it turns out in that place that the algebra completely splits this function up into simpler things if this is transformed to Mellin space. So this is an example that a very wild-looking object is actually nothing but a plain Mellin convolution of some higher functions. And that you can spot in Mellin space quite easily, because you have the synchronization, and there you see just the products. And when you transform back, you would get, for instance, those functions. Now, before we come to the harmonic polar logarithms, I would like to give you an overview on the multiple theta values, which of course also occur in all these representations. And they can be viewed as the end to infinity limit of the single harmonic sums, the single nested harmonic sums. They occur in total gross sections, of course, in the beta function, the Grover relation, and in individual integer moments. And I've written down a few examples here, so you see all these individual theta values. So this is not the most weird cases, of course, because we get only theta 3 and theta 5, essentially. But if you look onto the sums, you can, of course, construct all this. And one calls this, there's different notations for this, but some value for this is multiple theta values. So you see you get these different nestings. Sometimes there's also a minus one here, but this all can be mapped forth and backward. And it's the non-alternating multiple theta values. And then other people call the, because it's also merging, the alternating things, where you have in the numerator, so the sign of this A, for instance. And so here's always a modulus, of course, but here you can have an alternation. And they are called the so-called colored multiple theta values when one of those things is alternating. Now, this is a very well understood topic, and it became understood in the late 80s and during the 1990s by number theorists. A lot of Americans worked in this. And so we have the shuffle relations, so-called shuffle relations. I don't say anything anymore in the conjugation. And basically, it's a belief that everything is known, so one can find a complete Gröbner basis representation for that, at least perhaps up to the rank 20. And a French group at Lille worked this out with Mathematica on Maple, and they always print 250 pages in PostScript. So they stop 200. This is rank 12 here, and the alternating can only be run until rank 7. But I think they have tables to rank 12 both, and maybe there's more to come. Yeah, but I mean, the point is you can, of course, produce these tables, and Jost van Mazeren has plans to go much further with form, for instance, so maybe Maple is not really the right thing to do. So I have summarized the state of the art. So Jost is a market leader, I think, with rank 9 for the alternating, and they are on rank 12, but that can easily be adjusted. Maybe Jost is also there. No, I don't quite know. Now, you have to enlarge your basis, and there's also one alien thing. There's a divergence thing, of course, if this logarithmic divergence, when you have the normal harmonic sum is, of course, infinity when you go to infinity. So you add a symbol for this, and then you get all kind of transcendental numbers, or hopefully transcendental numbers. And some of them are just expressed by these symbols. So the nice thing is, when you do a calculation as an observation, that most of those things except the odd theta values cancel. So it's a nice tracer. And so far we have no counterexamples that at least in four dimensions one of the other guys is surviving. Now the question is, can you count the length of the basis? And that was, there's a connection for this by Broadhurst, Kreimer, and also Sarchi in the middle of the 1990s. So it depends on the weight of the sum. So you determine the weight. So this is here, for instance, 7. Then you have the Möbius functions, and so you look for all divisors of this particular weight. So at 7 it's very easy, but of course you have also numbers which are not prime, have divisors. So you have to sum over the Möbius function and then have to weight this with the Perron number, and this is basically sort of a shifted Fibonacci number by this recursion. And this was verified explicitly up to depth 12, so we know basically everything in depth 12. This, we can calculate quite a lot in quantum field theory until we really exhaust all this. Now the next thing I would like to speak about is the harmonic sums, so the real thing. The harmonic sums, of course, emerged in the famous paper also by David Gross and Wilczek, where there is this S1 emerging, and it's due to the Mellin transformation of the softly divergent piece of the Fermi splitting function, which was later then rediscovered by Aldarelli and Parisi in 1977. Fermi had in the 20s in QED already, also in a theory which we would today call QED. Now there's also alternating sums because we have not only the normal propagators, but we can also have equal particle exchange. So we have also this 1 over 1 plus x. So this is a source of these alternating sums. And when I not send n to infinity, I have then all these nested multiple harmonic sums. Now, the question is, how do they obey an algebra? And again, we go back to combinatorics. And there is a famous paper by Euler from St. Petersburg in 1775. And he discovered that these harmonic sums, so he was studying these theta values also, have this relation when you say interchange the indices, symmetrize, so to say, the left-hand side, you can write it as a product of two harmonic sums and you have to add the diagonal. So it took a little bit longer to get a similar relation at level 3, so at depth 3, this were Indian mathematicians in 1984. Then we came around, so this is of course trivial to generalize this, and we have then, okay, you can easily write down the n-area relation for that when you symmetrize the left-hand side completely. The nice thing is that you only get single harmonic sums as a polynomial on the right-hand side when you symmetrize the right-hand side, the left-hand side completely. So this is of course an easy, you can easily make an analytic continuation because you know that the analytic continuation of these sums are always derivatives of the psi function, so logarithmic derivative of the gamma function, and then you are done. But the bad thing is, of course, you don't have always this complete symmetry on the left-hand side. So it can happen that you have to also calculate something really, and you would like, though the aim is, of course, to find the algebraic relations when the left-hand side is not completely symmetric. Now, this goes all very empirically. So what we have done, we have, of course, also calculated, say, fully symmetric sums where all the indices are equal, and so you easily find that you get those determinant relations for the right-hand side. And then one afternoon, I went to the library and looked into a book by chance. This is a book by Behrendt. It did it. This is Ramanujan's notebook number 1. And what do I see? I see this determinant relation. So maybe Ramanujan had this. But then I was reading further, the guy had not studied harmonic sums, but integer sums. How can he get the same relation? And then I looked into the references, and actually Mr. Behrendt, who is very careful, the mathematician from Wisconsin, gave a notice on Fadi Bruno. This is a Beatus by now, and canonized in 1988, so he died already nearly 100 years before, and he wrote a book on the theory of the binary forms. This was very popular, invariant theory, Hilbert, in the 19th century. And so what he had there, he had similar relations for the roots of, say, polynomials with different variables. And so some permutation symmetry is behind that, and apparently all the relations didn't depend on the object. And in this way, I personally was guided to say relations which have to do rather with the algebra of the indices than with the object itself. Yeah? So this is what you're guided to. Now let us count. That is right. This is the most symmetric one. But now you ask for, say, a tetrahedron or whatever, so not a square, not a cube, but a more complex, say, things, and all the algebra. You ask for all the algebraic relations, not just for the most symmetric ones. So the most symmetric ones actually are easy, and then you have more. I mean, and that's actually the concern. But these people actually had only the most symmetric ones, and then you have to go further with that. Now. Actually, what you need for it is something which was what is called the shuffle product. That is the generalization of the product which we just spoke about, and the shuffle product of those objects. So you should not think of, when I write S here, you should not think of harmonic sums. This is just some object which has indices, and we define for this so-called shuffle product. Shuffling means that you have on the right-hand side to write down all index combinations which leaves the index order in a single object the same. So never in this case A3 should come before A2, but only after. And then you can easily work out what this shuffle relation actually on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side means. Now, this is, when you work this out, related. So I've written down that to the level we needed for the three-loop coefficient functions, actually. And if you work that out, you get then on the right-hand side all the other terms, because harmonic sums are not minimal. There is these contraction terms here, for instance. And so you get a bunch of linear equations. And you can write down the whole all possible linear equations for that. And if you can solve all these linear equations, you can determine all these relations. And that is, of course, done. And you get big matrices. So I show you one. This is a medium-sized one. And so the bigger one I can't show, because this is the biggest one I had, was 720 times 2160. This is one CPU day on a 2 gigabyte machine. To solve this, and at the end, you find out you get 120 independent sums. So this is 6 factorial over 6, which teaches you something. And then you think a little bit later, and so you could have saved this day if you would have thought at the beginning. Now, you can write these things explicitly. Okay, just to show this, you get this, that we have done it. And that is a case which is actually needed for the coefficient functions. We do coefficient functions. This goes a little bit further even. And there's, of course, more complex things, and then you can't show all them anymore, so you show just one example for this. This is a depth 6 thing, one of the entries here. And now the point is, of course, why do we get what? So we want to know what is the length of the basis. And you can, what you do empirically, you make tables. So you have the case, for instance, AAA. This is absolutely reducible, so you have just say triple sum anymore. This is just single sums. And in that case, you have AAB. You have one basis element, so one out of three is needed. And in the case ABC, it's also one out, so this is 2 out of 6 in that case. So the ratio seems to be 1/3. When you go to depth 4, you have mostly 1/4, but one times you have 1/6, because you have here higher symmetry, and one, of course, would like to count this and to explain this. Now you go further, we need to go to 6. So 1/5 is, of course, clear. That has to happen here, and I will tell you in a minute why. And in case 6, you have, of course, cases also with a higher symmetry, for instance, this one here. And there you will gain more whenever you have this higher symmetry. Now, the question is, can we understand this a little bit better? And that Stefan Weinzierl was pinpointing to me. That could have to do with London words, and I looked in the literature about that, and actually you learn this from books on so-called Lie algebras or free algebras. Lie algebras not actually needed for that. Free Lie algebras not needed. You can just study free algebras. And what one does is one introduces so-called alphabets. So this is synonymous to the usual alphabet A, B, C, D. So alphabets are ordered. We study ordered alphabets more precisely. And then we create the theory of words. So this is just A star over A. This is the usual words. And that's a non-commutative product which you introduce to make a word. And words, as we know, have prefixes, suffixes in the middle part. And to define a Linden word, and just for easy to easy commemorate this, a Linden word is always smaller than all its suffixes. So you cut from the Linden word all its suffixes consecutively, and then the whole word has always to be lower than the suffix of this. And those words you count. And there is, since 1979 by Radford, a theorem that the Linden words do freely generate the shuffle algebra. Therefore, when we have counted all these Linden words, which we do now back on the envelope and not in the frontal view at 2 gigabytes and 2 gigahertz, you can easily find out that the result, what we got after this heavy calculation, is true. Now, let us do this. For instance, we had this case when we have only A's and one B in our index set. There's only one Linden word possible, because all the A's have to be left. And we have, of course, n permutations, and so the ratio is 1 over n. That was 1 over 3, of course, and the Euler relation would be 1 over 2. Now, the more complicated example here, this has 3 Lindon words, and you can construct them, so just writing down all the combinations, and it's actually 20, and then 3 of them are Lindon words, so 3 over 20. And that's smaller than 1 over 6, so you would expect 1 over 6 in case, but you're a little bit, you gain a little bit by because of this situation. Now the question is, can one derive a formula for that? And actually this was done in a very old paper by a Hamburg mathematician before the Second World War. This was Ernst Witt, 1937, and he had Treue Darstellung in Liesche Ringe, a paper in German, and he counted this, and then you can isomorphically map what he has done for this, what we are doing, and now you get this relation, and we are now close to what Kreimer and Porthurst have conjectured, or also Sachier. We have here, again, the Möbius function, and this multinomial coefficient, and actually, if you now pin this down, you can then calculate for all length of harmonic sums those bases, and find the reduction mechanism. Now the question is, what do we gain to three-loop coefficient function level? And I have counted here the weights. This is weight 6. Most likely, I don't hope that we run, that anybody runs in weight 7 here a lot. And you see, we have here 114 basic sums, and this would be reduced out of 486. So the ratio is about a quarter, which you can really reduce everything with this kind of technology. Now, coming back to the two-loop level, you will get up to the two-loop level 23 of different functions, different sums. And these different sums you can map back, so the X-space, for those people who like to work in X-space, these are the basic functions you can't do much about, just mathematically. It doesn't mean that they will actually emerge in the physical problems. But some of them truly do emerge. For instance, this one, this is a very well-known since the time of Gonzales, Arroyo, Indurain, and so on. This is going to this one of these sums which could not really be resolved differently. This is just a Mellin transform of Li2 of x over 1 plus x. So this definitely will remain. Now we have to see what actually we can do with that, and that can only be studied, so the algebra is over basically. We have to go to something else, the so-called deeper relation. So we have now to take the value of the object more seriously. And then it turns out that whenever you know the Mellin transform of a function, you also know synonymously the Mellin transform of functions where logarithmic powers are in front, because this is just the derivative of this, of some to some extent. So this is not a new thing. It's a new function, but you don't regard it, you don't count it anymore. And there is, of course, a lot of other relations I don't speak about here at the moment, or this is still work in progress. So you can use relations between, so this has to do with cyclotomic polynomial mappings of polylogarithms and associated functions, and that we work through at the moment. And if you do that, and cross fingers, and look on the physics result, or there's a paper with Sven Moch, actually in preparation, so the Lord is not always ugly, he's also mercy to us, and not all the crime is happening, and what is surviving is these 8 objects, and by some relations we can cross out further 3. So the conclusion is, for massless problems in two-loop coefficient functions, the everything is bent except of derivatives of the psi functions, which you can transform back into X space also. Only these 5 objects actually, and the Mellin transforms of those survive. And then you can play the game further, which we're doing at the moment, and can hope to find out a similar simple structure for the three loop endless dimensions. And there's a couple of more, yeah, but we don't know yet because it's not finished the calculation of many. And but it's not 100 more or not 243 more. No, this is really a thing which will remain, to some sense, clear. Now, to go back from Mellin space, and where we analytically continue these objects, I will just say shortly something about it. you know that from the single harmonic sum, the normal single harmonic sum which you had introduced in your calculation, this is a psi function, and the psi function, of course, has a very nice mathematical representation. So for Bragg here, you know the asymptotic representation of the psi function for large arguments in the whole complex plane. You know it's meromorphic, so it has poles on the non-positive integers. And there you have to integrate, of course, around. This is clear where the contour has to lie. And you have a recursion relation. You can map psi of n to psi of n plus 1. So you have some argument in the complex place. You can step out wherever you want by the recursion relation. And when you're out far enough numerically, you use the asymptotic relation. And actually, thanks to the fact that all these things can be represented by so-called factorial series, all these harmonic sums have this property. One can show that. It's so that we actually exactly can do the same thing for all the nested harmonic sums. Practically, we will perhaps do fits which are much quicker, maybe not really brutal fit, but fits which are good as 10 to the minus 8, something like that, in the representation. So this may suffice for computer programs and maybe fast enough. That is what we have done to two-loop level some time ago. And one can, of course, accomplish this for the three-loop level then very soon. Now, what one has to do is one has to work all this out. And then the only thing to get back to X space with these objects, maybe convoluted with Barton densities and so on, is one multiplies everything out. So one solves the Alderelli-Parisi equation, which is an ordinary differential equation in N space to three loop orders, say. And then multiplies in the Barton densities. And then you do the contour integral around the places where the singularities are, and then you're done and can give the result to the experimentalist to do the fit. Now let me wrap up. There's algebraic relations between multiple theta values, say unknown, I think to a 12. Maybe in 2 months we will have more from the little group. The limit at the moment there is CPU time, so the running time, and the CPU, the size of the CPUs, I think, to go further with that at the moment. A French mathematician told me that there would be an interesting number theory problem when one could go to weight W equal to 20 or a little bit higher. I think there's something interesting going on, but it's for, say, applied mathematics, it's still far ahead, so perhaps this has to be done by different methods. Now, we know the basic counting relation for free algebras. And for that, explicitly, we had worked out all the relations down to depth 6. That's not weight 6, this is depth 6, so this goes with all weights up to depth 6. That can be used, so this is available as a Fortran code, so one can use it, say, in symbolic manipulations. And I think as these algebraic relations have not really to do with the number of scales which were involved, one could generalize it indeed to multi-scale problems. And that I would suggest as one thing to do. And maybe this would also lead to some simplification in more complex situations. And there's a lot of relations also by value between the harmonic sums or the multiple polylogarithms. And as far as needed for the physics, to at least for the endless dimensions, this is also understood what is actually going to happen. And finally, one has, of course, to do a representation chart with these analytic continuations when one would like to run programs and at the moment when we work on this to get it really running. Thank you.